Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Support for this podcast comes from Wise, the account that lets you send, spend and receive money internationally. 50 currencies, 170 countries, one account designed to take on the world. So whether you're taking on Rio or Rome, Miami or Mumbai, you'll always get the mid-market exchange rate when you convert currencies with no markups and no hidden fees. Join 15 million people and businesses who are going global with Wise. Learn how the Wise account could work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/BBC.
Who is your pick for the all-time greatest African midfielder?
He's the most naturally talented player that I've played with.
See if your choice made the list on Match of the Day Africa Top 10 from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Janet Jalil, and at 13 hours GMT on Monday the 10th of July, these are our main stories. The Kremlin says Russia's President Vladimir Putin met the Wagner leader days after his short-lived mutiny. President Biden has met King Charles and the British Prime Minister in the UK en route to a NATO summit in Lithuania. Astronomers discover an extremely hot planet where the clouds rain liquid metal. Also in this podcast, a BBC investigation finds that children in Ghana are being wrongly identified as having been trafficked and forcibly taken from their families.
They just came in and grabbed me. One of the men held a gun to my grandma's throat as if to shoot her, so I was terrified and I started crying.
Just over 2 weeks ago, the world was stunned by a mutiny in Russia. The Wagner mercenary group had taken a southern city and was marching on Moscow. Then, just as suddenly, the rebellion was called off. But President Putin's authority had been seriously weakened, with many wondering how much longer the man who had ruled Russia with an iron grip for 2 decades could survive. Especially as instead of being imprisoned or killed, the Wagner leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, was allowed to go into exile in Belarus. So far, there's been no sighting of him there, and recent reports have said he's actually still in Russia. Now the Kremlin has revealed that 5 days after the short-lived mutiny, Mr. Putin held a 3-hour meeting with Mr. Prigozhin and some of his commanders to discuss what had happened. Vitaly Shevchenko from our Russian service told us more.
The spokesman for the Kremlin, Dmitry Peskov, said that the president had voiced opinions about how the Wagner group was doing at the war with Ukraine, which officials in Moscow insist on calling the special military operation. And discussed at the meeting was what the spokesman called events of the 24th of June, which is obviously the mutiny. And interestingly, President Putin, according to his spokesman, put forward options for Wagner's future employment and use, which suggests that the Kremlin sees a future for the Wagner group. What wasn't mentioned in this statement by the Kremlin are whereabouts of Mr. Prigozhin himself. He's gone almost completely quiet on social media. He's not been seen ever since he left Rostov in the wake of his apparent fake mutiny. And that's one big question that still remains. Where is Yevgeny Prigozhin?
Yes, because under the terms of the deal that was struck by the Kremlin and the Wagner leader, he's supposed to be in Belarus, but there's no sign of him there so far. And in fact, there have been reports that he's actually still in Russia.
This meeting between him and President Putin on the 29th of June is supposed to have taken place just 2 days after the leader of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, said that he was in Belarus. So whether or not he's actually moving there, how many, if any, of his Wagner fighters are going to move to Belarus? What are they going to be doing there? All these very important questions still remain unanswered.
And also very important questions about Vladimir Putin's authority. What do you think the Kremlin is trying to achieve by telling us about this meeting?
Well, the fact remains that President Putin, at the start of this mutiny, he vowed to punish the people he called traitors. He said they had betrayed Russia. And as far as we can tell, he hasn't. Evgeny Prigozhin, as far as we know, is free to move across Russia and possibly to Belarus. So Vladimir Putin has embarked on a mission to save his standing. He's been appearing on TV much more often, meeting people. And this latest revelation or claim by the Kremlin that he had met Mr. Prigozhin himself, it may serve the purpose of presenting Vladimir Putin as a constructive leader who is willing to sit down and talk things over instead of using brute force. But again, people in Russia will be aware of mutiny. They will be aware of the fact that Evgeny Prigozhin has not been punished, even after his forces shot down a number of helicopters in the plane, killing the pilots. So that is something that is a big problem for the Kremlin.
Do you think it's a fair assessment to say that Vladimir Putin is looking weaker than ever?
Oh, definitely. He's looking weaker than in the recent years of him being in charge in Russia, that's for sure.
Vitaly Shevchenko. Well, as we heard there from Vitaly, fighters from the Wagner mercenary group were supposed to disband and move to Belarus following their failed mutiny in Russia. But as our Eastern Europe correspondent Sarah Rainsford found out, the group still appears to be active in Russia itself. Sarah began by joining police and soldiers reinforcing border patrols in the fields of eastern Poland in anticipation of the mercenaries' arrival.
There are already miles of tall metal fencing here, installed after Belarus encouraged thousands of migrants to cross 2 years ago. Now, the Polish government is warning that Wagner forces could be used to spark more trouble. Mikhail Bura from the Border Guard remembers the days when they used to socialize with the Belarusians, but not anymore.
The biggest threat is that our neighbour, Belarus, is completely unpredictable. Maybe Wagner will be a problem, but no one really knows why they're going there or what they're preparing for.
I'm right by the giant grey metal fence that divides Poland and Belarus now. Coiled barbed wire on top of it, and every 100 metres there's a concrete pillar with cameras. It's a sign, a really physical sign, of how much has changed in this region and the fact that Poland now sees Belarus as openly hostile. It is more than 2 weeks since the Wagner army rolled into Rostov and took over the Defence Ministry headquarters there. As more Wagner men marched on Moscow, their leader Evgeny Prigozhin was filmed berating senior Russian generals. The scenes were extraordinary. The deal done to end all this was meant to see Wagner disbanded and its fighters exiled to Belarus. Only they've not actually been spotted there yet. And now I found proof that they are still operating inside Russia.
Alo, это ЧВК Wagner?
Right after the mutiny, I called Wagner centres across Russia and they were still recruiting. So this weekend, I decided to check the lines again. They were all disconnected. But then an audio message popped up on Telegram from a Wagner contact still online. Yes, we're recruiting. Everything's as normal, the voice told me. I was calling myself Sasha, a Russian man's name. And so Wagner sent me full instructions on how to join them at their training base in southern Russia. This video is by an ex-paratrooper who's now part of a Belarusian cabinet in exile for opposition figures who are forced to flee a country that locks up its critics. Valery welcomed the mercenaries' march on Moscow last month as a sign that Russia is rotting from within, and he thinks his own country is even worse. He doubts Wagner fighters will ever relocate to Belarus in big numbers. And he's especially doubtful that Yevgeny Prigozhin would settle so close to Russia and to its security service.
I think he'll end up somewhere where it's harder for the Russian FSB to find and poison him. In Belarus, the FSB don't even wipe their feet at the door. They just march in and do what they want.
But on the border, Polish forces are keeping a close eye out in any case, with drones as well as thermal cameras. Security is a big issue here ahead of elections in autumn, so perhaps the government shouting extra loud about a threat that may never materialise. But the Wagner story, this whole mystery, isn't over yet, so who knows?
That report by Sarah Rainsford. Now to Windsor Castle here in Britain. A guard of honour greeted President Biden as he arrived for a meeting with King Charles III. Mr. Biden is on a short visit to Britain before he then heads off to a NATO summit in Lithuania, which is expected to be dominated by Ukraine. On the first stop of his UK trip, Mr. Biden held talks with Britain's Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, at No. 10 Downing Street.
Couldn't be meeting with a closer friend, and a greater ally in the dialogue to talk about our relationship to rock solid.
So why the brief stopover in Britain for the president? A question I put to our political correspondent, Rob Watson.
He could have easily decided to go straight to the NATO summit in Vilnius, but decided to stop here. And I think that's partly for domestic US political reasons. I mean, ahead of a presidential election, it looks good to be doing presidential things. But absolutely, I think he wants to let the UK know that after some rather difficult times under Liz Truss and Boris Johnson, things are sort of closer to normal.
Ukraine is going to be the big focus of their discussions ahead of the NATO summit in Lithuania.
And I think it's important to say that obviously that the United States and the UK and actually the rest of the NATO allies, they have far more in common on this issue than divides them. And worth remembering that the Russian invasion of Ukraine has united the alliance in a way not seen for the last 20, 30, 40 years. There are differences, nuances of difference on strategy, the extent to which, the speed at which you get Ukraine to be part of the NATO alliance. But by and large, there's a fairly high degree of unanimity that Ukraine must be supported.
Now, this isn't a state visit, but there is some pomp and pageantry as President Biden has now gone on from that meeting with Rishi Sunak to meet King Charles.
And you can't help feeling that actually that was rather the more important part of it, not just in terms of the amount of time spent, because he's spending four times longer, I think, with the king than with the prime minister. But again, you know, in terms of the way this looks for US domestic politics, the president getting this sort of reception from the king, it cannot do any harm. And then there is this rather more serious and important issue of climate change, which both the president and the king take rather seriously. And I think the Americans view King Charles as a potential ally on this subject, someone capable of rallying world opinion in a way that actually elected politicians can sometimes, it's more difficult sometimes to ask them to do it.
Rob Watson. Now, imagine a scorching hot world where temperatures reach 2,000 degrees Celsius and the clouds rain liquid metal. Scientists say the planet outside our solar system, known by the catchy title of LTT9779b, has defied their previous understanding of the universe and shouldn't have been able to exist. Our Europe regional editor, Paul Moss, told us why scientists have been so puzzled by this planet.
This is what is known as an exoplanet, one that exists outside our own solar system. Bear in mind, the first exoplanet was only discovered in 1992. Until then, we didn't know for sure if there were places like the Earth, Mars or Jupiter elsewhere in the universe. In the 30 years since then, they found more than 5,000 exoplanets, and they're getting to know what they're like. But this one was indeed a puzzle. It's very close to the star which it orbits around, so close it whizzes around it in 19 hours. Bear in mind, our own planet takes 365 days to go around our sun, so you get an idea of how quickly it's going. But it's also so close to the star that, as you said, it's a sizzling 2,000 degrees on the surface. And yet, this planet had clouds. How could it have clouds when things were so hot? Here on Earth, the temperature only has to get to, you know, about 30 degrees and the clouds evaporate away. And what they discovered, this extraordinary thing, The clouds are made of metal and they rain down droplets of titanium. And what the titanium does is it reflects the star's heat back into space, which means that the clouds can remain in place. So next time you complain about there being a heavy downpour, try to imagine having titanium rain. I suspect your umbrella won't do you much good.
And how did astronomers work out the planet's secret?
Well, they've been fascinated by exoplanets since they were discovered. And in 2019, the European Space Agency launched the CHEOPS telescope specifically to study them. This is one of those telescopes that orbits around the Earth, so it doesn't have the Earth's own clouds and light pollution in the way. That said, exoplanets are so far away. This one is 2,500 trillion kilometres away. You can't see them directly, just the way you look at a telescope and look at Jupiter or Saturn. You do it indirectly. And with this one, what they did is they looked at the light that was shining from the star that LTT9779b travels around, and they measured how much it dips when the planet gets in the way every 19 hours. And that way they worked out how much light it was reflecting from this planet's surface. Then they looked at the wavelength of the light, and they worked out that this extraordinary thing, the clouds, were made of titanium.
And briefly, Paul, why are astronomers making such an effort to study exoplanets?
You know, there's an awful habit that when there's anything about astronomy in the news, the first thing journalists want to say is whether this indicates there might be life on other planets. I have to say they do look at exoplanets for that reason. They want to know if they might harbour life. But also, by understanding other planets, you get to learn a lot about other solar systems, about the universe, how it formed, and particularly when the Big Bang eased and things got cool enough that other planets could form. So by looking at planets like this one, you learn an awful lot about space.
Paul Moss. Still to come, concern grows about the side effects of injectable weight loss drugs popular with celebrities.
The issue of self-harm or people taking their own lives, we've got to take seriously.
Whether you call it football or soccer in your part of the world, Match of the Day Africa Top 10 is the podcast bringing you the best of African football. I'm former Congolese captain Gabriel Zakwani, and joining me for hosting duties, Ivory Coast's Yaya Toure.
Hi, Yaya Toure, yeah.
And Nigeria's Efe Nwankwo.
Hi.
Each week, we're trying to decide who makes it to number one on our African football top 10 lists. That's Match of the Day Africa Top 10 from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome back to the Global News Podcast. A BBC Africa Eye investigation has raised serious concerns about one of the world's leading anti-slavery organisations and their West African operations. The International Justice Mission, or IJM, has been accused of wrongly identifying children as trafficking victims. The BBC's Chenchen Hene Boaten has been to Ghana, where families say children were forcibly taken into care and their parents unfairly prosecuted.
Moahina is a remote village in northern Ghana. Last year, IJM and the local armed police conducted a raid here to free four children identified as victims of trafficking. But local women insist they were looking after their own grandchildren when they were taken away by force. Adamu is one of their grandmothers.
I was worried. Were they going to kill the kids? What were they going to do with them?
After the raid, the children were taken from their village to a hotel where they were photographed, washed and fed, and then moved to a shelter. Their families had no information about their whereabouts. 11-year-old Fatima is the eldest.
They just came in and grabbed me. One of the men held a gun to my grandma's throat as if to shoot her, so I was terrified and I started crying.
The raid was part of IJM's effort to combat child trafficking into the local fishing industry, a known issue in the area. But the rescue missions have been accused of doing more harm than good to the local communities. BBC Africa Eye went undercover to investigate the allegations. Posing as an intern for IJM in Ghana, our undercover journalist was given access to one of the charity's work phones. In there, we found hundreds of WhatsApp messages from dozens of rescue missions, including the raid during which Fatima was taken. In these texts, which we have voiced based on IGM data, a legal officer from the charity clarifies their understanding prior to this operation.
Mohammed's case was assessed to be a trafficking case. For the other three girls, it came up there were no elements of trafficking.
The messages show that, despite the lack of trafficking evidence, IGM continued to support the village rescue and all four children were taken. But why?
Say apart what we think we can do.
In this secretly filmed footage, this staff member explains IGM is target-driven, with teams expected to support set numbers of rescues and arrests by the authorities.
Set the higher targets. We are committing resources, so we can't commit a lot of resources for you to rescue just 10 children in a year. So the targets will be set, you just have to push yourself and achieve them.
Here, our undercover journalist speaks to one of the investigators working in the field.
So what would happen like if you get there, like on the day that you've decided that this is the day I come to do the rescue and then you don't get the children?
Hey, you have to get them.
IGM told us that its targets aim to evaluate impact so its work can be most effective. It said social workers may independently decide to remove children who show clear signs of abuse or neglect, even if they are not victims of trafficking. Social services told us that they acted upon information they received from the charity and returned the children after their own investigation found they had not been trafficked. After about 4 months, Fatima and the other children were allowed to return home and all criminal charges against their relatives were dropped. Back in her village, Fatima discovered her grandfather had died.
I was crying and wondering, since my grandfather has left us, where would we see him again?
IGM has told us that its approach always has the welfare of children at its core. Social services said that, in the future, IGM may need to get additional permissions ahead of any rescue operations.
Chen Chen Hene Boateng reporting from Ghana. China has faced a spate of mass stabbings in recent years, often targeting children. Now, in the latest such attack, this time on a kindergarten, three children and three adults have lost their lives. Two of the dead were parents, one was a teacher. A 25-year-old man has been arrested in connection with the killings in the southern province of Guangdong. We got more from our correspondent, Rupert Wingfield Hayes.
Well, details are still rather sketchy, but we have heard from the authorities in the town of Lianjiang. They say that they have got a young man, 25-year-old man in custody, who is the only suspect in this attack. It appears to have taken place just as parents were bringing their children to this kindergarten this morning. We've seen photographs from the scene, which are extremely grisly. There are bodies inside the school, what appears to be in the school's gymnasium, and the body of another person lying on the street outside. At the moment, we have no indication of what might have been the motive behind this attack. What we do know is, statistically, over the last decade or so, these sort of attacks have become more common in China, despite the fact that China remains a pretty safe society where violent crime is quite rare.
We have heard in the past years about attacks specifically on kindergartens. Do we know what the factors are behind this and how the authorities are trying to deal with this to try to stop this happening in the future?
It's interesting. Before I came into the studio, I was just looking at some stories from 2010 when another spate of attacks took place. So, you know, back 13 years ago, and the reaction of the government then, the Prime Minister, the Chinese Premier at the time, was to call for greater security at schools, and indeed security has been increased at schools across China following these sorts of attacks, but also to address the underlying social problems behind the, and to understand the social problems that drive the sort of isolation and anger, vengeful attitude towards society that the perpetrators of these sort of attacks seem to feel. Well, that was 13 years ago, and yet, if anything, the number of attacks has increased over the last decade or so. So it appears that there has not really been any success in addressing those underlying social issues. If anything, they have got worse.
That was Rupert Wingfield Hayes. Injectable weight loss drugs have been called a game changer in the fight against obesity, but there's growing concern about their side effects. The European Union's medicines watchdog is launching a review saying some users reported suicidal thoughts or a desire to self-harm. Paul Gately is from Obesity UK and says there are solid processes in place to ensure the drugs are safe.
The issue of self-harm or people taking their own lives, we've got to take seriously. And thankfully, we have very strong processes in the UK and across Europe to make sure that these drugs are safe. And where issues are raised, they go through a process of check and assessment to be able to make sure that these drugs are safe.
Michelle Roberts has more on the story.
Social media posts about people, often celebrities, shedding large amounts of weight have led to huge global demand for injectable obesity treatments like Wegovy. Product leaflets for the prescription drugs that users administer themselves already list suicidal thoughts as a possible but uncommon side effect. The new safety review launched by the European Medicines Agency follows concerns raised by drug regulators in Iceland. A few users reported feelings of wanting to self-harm or take their own life. It's not clear whether that was linked to the drugs they were taking. The review will look at a number of brand name drugs that contain either semaglutide or liraglutide, the active ingredient that blunts appetite. The manufacturer Novo Nordisk is working with the EMA and says patient safety is a top priority.
Michelle Roberts, let's end this podcast in Australia, where a new population of rare rodents has been discovered. Broad-toothed rats were found in an area outside the city of Melbourne in the southern state of Victoria. Rob Young spoke to Saqib Qazi from the conservation organisation Zoos Victoria and asked him how the discovery was made.
It's a funny story. We have a team of conservation detection dogs here at Zoos Victoria, which are basically sniffer dogs which are trained to detect animals or their traces, or in this case, the scats that broad-toothed rats leave behind, or their poops. We were doing a particular type of training, which is called a blank area search, which is where you sort of get the animal used to the idea that it might have to search in an area where the animal or the scent doesn't actually exist. You know, sort of get them used to the idea of failing. So Moss, who is our four-year-old Labrador, who is trained on detecting broad-toothed rat scats, was taken to a part of the Corranderk Bushland Reserve, which is just outside of Healesville in eastern Melbourne, and into an area where we were pretty sure there weren't going to be any broad-toothed rats until he started very confidently indicating that he had found some broad-toothed rat scats. So we collected those scats, and then we were able to later identify that, yes, indeed, there were broad-toothed rats in that patch of bushland, unlike what we thought before.
Right. So you've been able to take photos of them, maybe to pick them up? How close were you able to get?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. So a couple of months ago, we actually managed to trap them. These are notoriously trap-shy species. They're obsessed with grass, right? And they live in grassy areas. So how do you actually coax them into a trap? It's often a bit of luck, but we managed to trap three healthy adult individuals in the Corranderk and had a good look at them. They were looking pretty good. And again, it's just further confirmation that there are these rats in that patch of bush.
Right. Why is finding them important then? Why does it matter?
So there were no broad-tooth rat records at all from the region. I think the closest broad-tooth rats are about 18 kilometres away. So to find them here, especially in the Corranderk, which is actually a predator-free area, it's got a predator exclusion fence around it, is really important because here in Australia, we have lots of problems with introduced cats and foxes decimating small mammal communities, including broad-toothed rats. So to have them literally in our own backyard in an area where they're going to be safe from cats and foxes means that we can look after them a lot better and make sure that they continue to thrive and survive well into the future.
Right. And these are native to Australia, are they? Or are they found pretty much around the world?
No, they are native to southeastern Australia. In fact, they are threatened in the state of Victoria and they're soon to be listed as endangered nationally. They are found in sort of southeast mainland Australia and also in Tasmania, just off the coast of southern Australia.
So the fact you've discovered a new population then is potentially giving you some hope, is it, that they could survive?
It absolutely is. I mean, we get so few of these positive stories in the world of conservation, so we'll take any positive we can get.
Oh, I've seen a photo of this rat. Looks less rat-like than I perhaps had expected, but it's been described as seriously, seriously cute. Is it?
Look, I mean, oh, absolutely. I mean, look at that photo and you tell me that that is not a cute animal. I mean, it's got chubby cheeks. It's got soft brown, round bodies, short tails, short little ears. They're nothing at all like the black rats and house mice that you're perhaps used to at your home or on the farm. They are seriously, seriously cute, and I'll stand by that statement.
That was Saqib Qazi speaking to Rob Young. And that's all from us for now, but there will be a new edition of the Global News Podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Chesney Fawkes-Porter. The producer was Muzaffar Shakir. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Janet Jalil. Until next time, goodbye.
Support for this podcast comes from Wise, the account that lets you send, spend, and receive money internationally. 50 currencies, 170 countries, one account designed to take on the world. So whether you're taking on Rio or Rome, Miami or Mumbai, you'll always get the mid-market exchange rate when you convert currencies with no markups and no hidden fees. Join 15 million people and businesses who are going global with Wise. Learn how the Wise account could work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/BBC.